Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Thursday stream. I'm joined, as always now, it seems, by my co-host Evelyn. I think Trig is planning some sort of D&D thing today, so he can't be here. I'm not entirely sure.
Trig is doing
He's
Trig things. We are here doing as we have done for a while and shall continue to do.
Yes, he's taking a bit of a break from some internet stuff, which is, as we explained this week, which is fine. He is still, welcome on the stream. He does still come on the stream, so there hasn't been any kind of shuffling away of Trig. He's just busy while we've been doing this, and will be on future episodes, I reckon. So, no need to riot for Trig. He will be here.
Well,
But apart from
rioting will not get them tricked. They need to learn that.
They need to learn that. But we have our a bit of a meaty one today, let's say. There's quite a lot of things we're going to go through. Because as some of you may have noticed, some lines still go up, but no one believe it. And a lot of line has started going down. Oh no. Line not go up anymore, what happened? Well, a lot of the stuff we've been talking about,
Line broken. Please go and fetch a line fixing man. Where is
Fix
Ben
it, fix it, fix
Bernanke? Where is his
it.
$1 billion bazookas?
Where is the big bazooka?
Help us,
Yeah.
Mr. Bernanke.
Oh no, the
You.
crypto bazooka.
That was
Remember
the
that?
JP Morgan crypto bazooka.
The JP Morgan crypto bazooka is a hell of a thing. But yes, welcome folks. I can see folk filtering in. It's gonna be, as you can tell, quite a heavy economic stream. But a lot of it is gonna be us essentially being vindicated in our predictions. Quite a lot of the stuff we talked about actually in a stream we did about maybe 6 months ago, maybe a little bit less, called the coming housing crisis.
That wasn't even necessarily a stream. I think that was actually a rare video.
That was a video from us, the rare video from us.
Yeah, JD's got the point there. Why my Excel spreadsheet not green? Why not green?
Government man said it would be green.
Just hit the keyboard more. Money will start coming out of it.
Just speed the keyboard. Oh dear. Well, most of what we're going to be talking about really is around the framing of the managerial economy in general, in interventionism, and a worked example of how all these interlocking factors have caused inevitably the situation we're in now, as people kept saying it would. There's been a We'll go through it later, quite near the end, but there's been a lot of denial of reality that's happened during this whole thing. And a lot of people who have been swearing blind that printing large amounts of money won't create inflation. The inflation isn't coming. Actually, the inflation's good. We talked about this stuff previously, but really this, we are seeing reality asserting itself, and really I think they've had to give up on a lot of the pretenses. I think they've even started to give up on a lot of the Ukraine pretense now, because it's mentioned in passing in some of these, but it has been removed from front and center because
Yeah.
people really aren't buying it.
Well, I don't even necessarily think people are or aren't buying it. I think sometimes people just get sick of hearing about stuff. And especially when, as we will go on to see, when the fake and gay economy becomes so fake and gay that its fakeness and also gayness starts to impact upon your real life, and you have to now pay fake and gay prices for goods that used to actually just be like normally priced. Now, obviously, I mean we've talked about, I think, a number of different things in regards to economics and so many different subjects, but I mean just the nature of monetary policy, its effect on things like supply chains had been mentioned before, but as we're focused on more here, things like housing, things like large scale fuel markets, things like big money markets, and a lot of the difference of, the financial bits where maybe not necessarily your money is, but it's where your pension is. It's where the people you go to get mortgage finance put their money. It's the tier above us before the shit really hits the fan and all of a sudden your house is worth half of what it was 2 weeks ago. So we're not quite at that point, but we are getting all of the warning signs that we are coming close to that. There was, I think, even Michael Burry had tweeted stuff the other day and then basically deleted it and deleted his Twitter and all sorts. That's Michael Burry of the story from The Big Short. He essentially tweeted something like, "I hate doing this job. That all this stuff's horrible. It's gonna be bad."
Yeah.
You know,
He's
tweeting about seed banks and stuff like that, probably.
he's basically talking. He's like grabbing people, screaming and telling them to buy farmland and water. That's what Michael Burry's up to these
Yeah,
days.
buy
He's going
saline
around.
tablets and learn how to build water filtration out of rocks and plastic drums.
Yeah, when he was talking about inflation in the middle of 2020, I think Saint Musk called him a broken clock.
Oh.
Shows what that retard knows. Because Burry has been on the money for the past decade and a half on most things. He
Well, no,
was he's
he was one of the people that sussed that something wasn't right about mortgage valuations in
yeah.
as early as 2005, 2006. And
He's
then
basically what, yeah, what from what I hear, what he's saying is based on historical trends, this crash is going to be, his prediction is about 15% worse than 2008 in terms of the difference between the height of the property bond market and the low point, which if you look at market conditions and inflation and everything that's happening right now, that is a much larger shock than is what happened in 2008.
Well, see,
If
it's
anything, 2008 had a lot of other indicators that were quite healthy,
well,
so.
that's something actually. There was a recent Bob Murphy podcast that was relatively interesting. It was one that's still on his website. It's not up on YouTube yet, but it was something along the lines of, why didn't inflation happen post 2009, 2010, in the same way that it's happening now? And there's all sorts of different interesting reasons for that. But one of them was that there was a lot more relatively nearby assets with which people who were on the middle rungs could throw their last bits of cash at to weather the storm. And that's why partially you had things like Bitcoin grow out of that. You also had new record highs for both silver and gold, and some of your more safer or more tied to real world industry kind of stocks all had their big kind of bump up. Was all the money, or what was left of the money, escaping into those things and actually doing something productive in the real world for a few years, which got us, things like cheap cars and electronics, and people actually developed mechanical things and electronical things that we didn't have prior to. Whereas at the
The
moment,
yeah, so
things are
the big
so, obviously, things are so rocky that if you were to have a large shock, there isn't all the places to run and hide that there was before.
no JD brings up equity release, and we will get to that. Oh boy, don't worry, but we're gonna get to that in our second segment, I guess. But what I wanted to also say is that the big story with 2008, before we get into the actual economics of this stuff, is that there was not deflation, whereas there was a collapse in demand. Demands just fell up a cliff. People didn't have money for an extremely long time, and you'd expect to see, in those cases, deflation happening. Prices normally going down, reducing to what people could actually afford. That didn't happen. Yes, you had slow inflation in quotes, but really you had a protracted period of what we saw during the lockdowns, in that demand collapses and deflation doesn't follow. So they are really just, there was mass inflation going on, but it was to hide the crash in demand.
Well, see, I think one thing as well that we could suggest to people to look out for, and the stuff that we're actually going to look at the headlines we've got here. The 2007 2008 crash was not telegraphed to normal people. They were
No.
not told to do things with their money. They were not told to prepare. They were essentially not given the psychological sort of prompt needed to actually fuel the fire somewhat. Whereas here, I've just got the thing up just now. This is kind of what kicked off maybe some of the interest about this stuff in the start of the month when the Bank of England put their rates up to, was it, you've got the other graph here actually. They bumped their rates up to 1.25% after them being at what, 0.25%, 0.5% through
Yes.
most of COVID. And there has been calls essentially. I mean, this is something I saw appear on notice board stuff a couple of days before at the end of May. people were asking for 2.5-3%, and then, you know, calling on Bank England for 3% interest rate. You know, there was a lot of, and sort of, if you go and study economics in university, they will focus on something that I think is interesting, but they maybe don't take to the fullest extent, which is the sort of effect people anticipating inflation itself has on inflation. You know, if you think things are going to get expensive in 2 months' time, well, you'll just buy it now. So
They're trying, yeah.
you would actually move forward your purchasing schedule further forward than it would have been prior to. And henceforth, if you and a large number of people do this and you move all your, you know, what you could refer to as a purchasing schedule closer towards you, you're actually inflating the price of goods higher than you would otherwise be because you're creating a higher demand for these things at a time when, you know, supply is being restricted and money's being thrown at the situation. So, you know, it's like the money people are spending now that they've got left from the end of furlough or whatever fake job they've been up to at a vaccine centre for the last 2 years, that's still the free, cheap, easy money. So there's still plenty out of it there to be spent. You know, this, wait, I think, is it in here that they go on to say, yeah, Andrew Sims, former external bank, member of Bank Monetary Policy Committee, central bank needs to aggressively accelerate the pace of its monetary tightening to contain price pressures that are building throughout the economy. UK inflation hit a record 9% last month, is on course to peak at 10.2% this autumn. That figure is going to get dwarfed. You know, even
Yes.
this article's 3 weeks old, and that figure's out of date. You've got this guy here is throwing out 10% inflation later this year. That's a, no way. I mean, I
That no,
think actually,
that's not.
the idea of 3% inflation by the end of the year, or not 3% inflation, sorry, 3% interest by the end of the year is probably optimistic.
What they're also measuring there is CPI inflation. We've talked about CPI before, but those who don't know, CPI is incredibly fake. It is the Bank of England and monetary policy, quote unquote, experts, economic managerialists, picking and choosing what goods they include in a basket of.
Dropped out on this end. I can't tell.
Energy, especially
I think either me or yourself, or possibly both of us, completely cut out for whatever you were saying there. I don't know if there is. Yeah. I don't know if that's working now.
essential good.
Right. It keeps dropping and then coming back.
Oh, was that me or was that you?
I actually can't tell because it's like it dropped out in Discord and then chat kind of froze. So I'm still trying to work out.
I think it's working again now. Sorry, guys. It's the internet, the UK internet in general is super weird. Even mobile internet's super weird today. Like infrastructure is odd.
Yeah, I don't know. Something's up. So whatever you went on to say there, we didn't hear, I'm afraid.
Oh, sorry. What I was saying is that it's. I was basically rounding off the fact that the CPI is fake and gay, and that the real inflation number is anywhere from 20 to 30%.
Yes, because it's actually a relation of the total stock of money in relation to the total stock of goods, both in terms of, you know, if you were to look at it. I mean, there is definitely ways to look at that because you can look at things like year on year growth or total growth, or there's different ways to measure it in theory, but the notion that you sit down with your group of experts or managers and pick out this perfect basket of goods that somehow represents what the average person spends on, and from that you can work out, well, here's what the rough spending power is of the average person. That is laughable,
It is. It's a very, very laughable
especially
idea that.
when something like housing isn't really included in that. And
No.
you have, you know, as I think this is basically an updated article, one we looked at the other month. You know, average UK house prices hits £360,614 in fifth record this year.
Well, did we show that graph earlier that you just had? One that
Yes,
showed the historic.
I put it up when we were talking about
Yeah, because
interest rates.
it's very, keep that in mind. It's very funny because this is supposedly an apocalyptic rise. Like 3% is nigh unthinkable at the moment.
Also worth mentioning, as we will get into with some of the stuff about landlords and other things, think about the position the financial middleman who is borrowing from an investment bank and is then an owner of five or six properties in, what was it, dropped again? I'll keep talking anyway till John's back.
I'm back. I'm
Oh,
here.
there he
Yep,
is.
I'm still here. I think you dropped.
Right. No, I was going to say, you know, think of the situation of the middleman who is financing, you know, buy to let sort of mortgages or, you know, and is renting out. Their rates aren't just going to go up to 3%, and they're not just going to follow what the Bank of England's doing, because the middleman sort of financier has to also, you know, they have to work out their anticipation of what interest rates are going to be. So you end up with this weird, you know, game of like constantly anteing up one another until someone essentially breaks and can't pay, and then the thing kind of comes apart, really.
Well, yeah. It
Shouting Thomas in chat. I love getting absolutely railed by the ruling class. Feels so good. Yeah,
well,
me too.
there's loads of stuff here that feeds into each other. There's like so many interdependent factors here. You look at the historic rates, we've essentially been in an emergency financial situation since 2009 in the UK with the way the base rate is. You see here the house prices. The one thing you can't really hide inflation from, like average house prices are at 368, nearly 369
You know,
thousand pounds.
Havering is at the opposite end of this list as the most expensive area in London, beating Kensington and Chelsea. Houses coming to the market in this borough cost an average £1.45 million.
Well, if you look at it compared to like average wages and average salary, the depending on how you measure it, like the median average salary for all workers in the UK is just £25,900. And that was updated last month. The
Are you sure? Because when I looked at this earlier on, it said April 2021.
no, it says last updated 30th of May 2022 is the Av Trinity one. That
Yeah.
one. It says updated 30th of the 5th, 2022.
Fair enough. But no, it's as you say, like it's the basic math that AA does with a lot of stuff to try and show people. Just in a rough abstract way, like, you know, how many hours, how many years did the average person in 1900 have to work to afford a three bedroom house in London?
Yes,
And now,
it's the
how,
labor hour calculation.
yeah. And you see that despite all of these quote unquote labor saving techniques that we've got, what that's actually meant is that you're between that and the effect of inflation on the in the monetary sense. Your labour's worth a buttonth of what it was worth before, or a pittance, I should say.
Well, the housing market's at an all-time high. A huge amount of people have bought at this all-time high as well, because coming out of the lockdowns, there was a massive velocity, if to use that term,
Well,
change in the housing market.
so much so that as of 3 days ago, the Bank of England withdraws a mortgage affordability test.
Yes. They're having to try and keep this whole thing going because a huge amount of people are about to fall into negative equity. Most people have bought at the high point of the market because they were banned from trading before all this really bit in, and it's been a kind of a double 1-2 punch. And that there's been genuine high demand, also adverse market conditions that are driving up prices to an insanely inflated degree, and you've had people essentially forced to buy a house in that period because they've been denied the ability to move property for the 18 months beforehand. It hasn't been a market demand, it's more of been a market of desperation. And in that desperation, to keep the shell game going, they have had to remove their main affordability test for mortgages. They're now leaving it to lenders, and they're saying that the backstop, normal kind of credit rating
Yeah, I was gonna
slash
say.
loan assessment stuff will suffice when a mortgage is much more complex than that
Well, yeah, I've
and
got
much more sensitive to base rate rises.
the actual FPC report up on it. It's the 0.6 decision. Following the consultation, FPC has decided to withdraw the affordability test recommendation with effect from August 1st. The withdrawal of the FPC affordability test recommendation does not place any requirement on lenders to take action. The existing affordability assessment practices are subject to the FCA's MCOB framework and will remain so. It will be up to individual lenders as to whether they wish to make any changes to their own lending practices and determine the timing of any such changes after this date.
There's some funny stuff in here as well, about the fact that this is actually to remove the test that would stress test the mortgages about future rate rises. There's all kinds of stuff in here that says about the fact that they are no longer factoring in, and one of the main things this factors in, this affordability test, is the possibility of future rate rises.
Well, I was going to
That's
say, here's
why.
the rationale for proposed change, point 20. The FPC has examined the potential effect of both measures in a scenario of rapidly rising house prices where, absent policy measures, the risks from excessive household indebtedness would increase sharply. When comparing the effect of each individual recommendation in isolation, the FPC's analysis suggests the LTI flow limit is likely to play a stronger role than affordability test in guarding against an increase in aggregate household indebtedness. I mean, what that's essentially admittance there is this is like your upper limit of how many houses you could sell, and that this affordability sort of thing, almost in a certain sense, is set a kind of a limit below that. So that
Yes.
the basic kind of graph of you must meet both of these standards, then you've only got one sector of people you can sell to. But once you take one of those strictures off, then it's like, well, you can sell more houses now. You can do more loaning for houses to keep the market afloat, but don't get too insane. Watch yourself. Which seems to be one of the things that's kind of mentioned a lot of this stuff, and I think it's probably how a lot of people who are sort of self-employed landlords and stuff, but that almost feels like they're very on their own now. If you're a first-time buyer, if you're someone who's looking to finish your mortgage off, if you're in the middle of it, if you're trying to rent out, if you're someone who even works at some sort of the bit of the estate agents that doesn't involve you getting a silly commission for the sale, you're basically out on your own, hoping that the market doesn't just fall to bits around you and that you aren't holding some sort of bag when it does happen.
It's funny because they, like I said, it really does. They really are admitting that they're stripping this out because them raising this happened at the same time as them raising interest rates, and them raising interest rates has caused a large amount of people to fail this test because raising it to 1.25 and possibly even something like 3, with a they have to assume a rate rise of like 100 basic points, which this smashes. The rate rises this year will smash what that test has to say. So even within the stringency of the test that they've now withdrawn, most, they are going well
Oh,
outside
I
of
didn't
the
even.
quote unquote
We'll get to the.
acceptable bounds.
I just realised there's an equality and diversity section on this, but I want to look at the potential impact on the mortgage and housing markets but first. I didn't realise that was there at the bottom of this.
Yes, that has to be everything. Like
No,
you
I know,
that is.
but I still don't expect it to be there. Yeah, no, is this the bit you were talking about though? The FPC also notes that since the consultation opened, the mortgage interest rates have risen and the market expectation for the bank rate to rise further. While there was uncertainty about how reversion rates could respond, this could mean the stress rates could reach close to end 2021 levels within the next 12 to 18 months. Even if lenders were to apply only the minimum stress rate of 100 basis points over reversion rates, satisfied within MCOB rules, this suggests that the short-term impact on ma market access and house prices could be limited, which is then basically saying that, oh, we need to get moving more of it because otherwise this machine might slow down.
It's amazing that at a time of record house prices and what everyone admits is a runaway overheated market, they would remove the mortgage affordability test. It is such a kind of hat tip that they are just trying to do anything that keeps this situation going, and if anything were to slow down at any kind of rate, they would run out of road, and they're just trying to prolong it as much as possible before the inevitable crash happens. It's also a way of getting more people in debt,
Yeah,
because
just
as we've talked about previously, the point of all this is to make people be bailed out.
yes, it's to give you the, here's the luxury of the house, now here's the golden handcuffs of the mortgage.
Yes.
No,
It also means that it's desperation as policy.
no, I'm just looking
Go
at
on.
equality and diversity considerations. One trade body responded that they did not think the change would have any impact on the ability of those with protected characteristics to access the mortgage market. The response also noted that firms have risk monitoring in place to ensure all groups are fairly treated. The risk monitoring. However, one respondent thought that withdrawing the test could lead to an increase in prices that could disadvantage those on lower incomes, including minority ethnic households. Oh, it's a slight shame they didn't basically admit that, oh yeah, if we're removing this measure, it might mean that more brown people get scammed because they can't do the math right for their mortgage.
Yeah, they're kind of skirting around that, but like I said, by law they have to do those assessments now. That is just a legal thing. This very much follows on to the Bloomberg article you pointed out, which is from 2011, but it's very much bearing fruit now because we've talked about the rate rises, we've talked about the fact that people are being encouraged to take out mortgages that they cannot afford by the affordability test being withdrawn, by the fact that we've seen a by the Bank of England's own measure, unprecedented rise in interest rates at a time of unprecedented house prices and unprecedented household indebtedness because of those house prices. But back in June, basically a year ago, this month, Bloomberg saying that riskier mortgage bonds thrive off UK pandemic property boom. Deals backed by non-prime, the subprime loans, yeah, dominate over safer collateral. Bullish conditions are encouraging borrowers to ramp up. So this is having a secondary effect on the market in that
Just
the
the bit here. The business of mortgage securitization is getting a jolt from UK pandemic aid and a housing boom that's favouring lower end borrowers. Non-bank lenders have sold more than £17 billion of debt, pooling non-conforming and buy-to-let loans, the most in at least 4 years. According to data compiled by Bloomberg, that's more than double the amount sold during the whole of 2020. So, in the first half of 2021, £17 billion worth of junk mortgages that people are never going to repay were just handed out. God knows what it is by now, a year later. I mean, this isn't to mention the fact that what were they looking at for the we did some back of the fag pack maths when we looked at
yeah.
the rent to buy stuff, because rent to buy mortgages would be under this as well, I would presume, because they will not be looked at as normal
No,
banks, as like a like
they're
a
not.
old this is such and such Dave Smith that works in IT that gets paid 90 grand a year that's paying his mortgage here. It's not the same. So, that was like that's another £50 billion that we worked out roughly. Sorry, not 50. That was another half a trillion. So how, there's all just this toxic debt flying around. It's all becoming the same sort of thing again.
It is, and like to finance a mortgage, you have to sell a financial product on the other end. That's how it works. You can't give someone a mortgage these days really without a security. The old building society model is dead, and you have everyone's mortgage is bundled up and sold to other investors, and that's the only way that mortgages can be handed out. So this 24 billion is a sign on the other end that, like you said, there's 24 billion in unrepayable mortgages that have been lent out. And this is non-bank lending, which is kind of an amazing thing.
Well, I was gonna say,
This is.
look at the, I believe RMBS as, residential mortgage-backed securities.
Yes.
So
And you.
the graph here essentially indicates, 2018, what would that have been? Like almost three quarters of all, mortgage securitization debt was of, a prime form, which means it's it's something that's directly related to a large investment bank. There's not so many shell games going on. There's not dodgy rates going on. And furthermore, it's things that the rating agencies would actually legitimately put a double A, triple A rating on. Whereas all of a
Yes.
sudden 2019 comes about when, funnily enough, we get the repo rates start up, some of the indicators that actually sort of people looked at to almost suggest that COVID was going to happen.
Yes.
Anyway, all of a sudden that flips around, and in 2020 nobody sells anything because people were a bit skittish. And then by 2021, the market's, what's that, an extra two, an
That's
extra
year
four,
to date. That's 6 months
yeah.
worth.
So it's an extra 5 billion over what the market was in 2018, and the ratios have flipped.
The anyone who paid attention in 2009 should hear the words subprime mortgage boom and run for the hills. It's what this is. It is a direct repeat, and yet it seems to be being telegraphed at us, to be honest. It's just like, look, this is happening. Can't do anything about it. It's gonna
Yeah,
collapse.
non-prime mortgage bonds rated singly pay average spreads of about 150 basis points compared to 86 basis points for plain vanilla sterling credit. So they're straight up saying, like, we're going to rate these things at A, but we're going to value them at nearly double the risk.
Yes. That should tell you the difference between the two and the risk. If you look at the base rate being 0.25 and the interest rate, the rate of return being 1.5 there, that is a huge difference, a huge spread. And it should put alarm bells in what is in these mortgage bundles. Because 1.5 during 2021 was, that's kind of nutty compared to 0.86. It's like 60 something percent difference, which it shouldn't be. Not for that difference in rating, which is, I'm not an expert on the subprime market, but having studied quite a lot of it post 2009,
I
that is a
forget that they go on
bizarre
to talk
figure.
about China. China Evergrande's dollar bonds jumped session highs on Friday, rebounding after some their sharp day early declines. Didn't that basically just all collapse at the start of this year? The Chinese economy hasn't really
Yes.
recovered yet. But no,
It's.
it's hilarious that this is them and their fancy finance like magazines basically bragging about, hey, look, we're all doing that same thing we did just over a decade ago, and we're making a fortune.
What's happened is 2 days ago, Financial Times, Hong Kong Exchange sets terms for Evergrande to avoid delisting. A day ago, Asia Financial. China's Evergrande handed delisting deadline by Hong Kong Exchange. They have gone from, being a rebound and essentially being in a boom again to the risk of delisting and humiliation as essentially China's, they're not China's BlackRock, but they're essentially China's second largest. So they'd be more like a, what are they called? The not BlackRock, but the other ones.
Yeah, it would be like the equivalent of like a really large rent sort of organization or a massive sort of
It'd be like
loaner of,
Vanguard. It'd be like
yeah.
Vanguard being delisted or State Street. I got there eventually.
But
But that's what
you
we're dealing with here.
can, because of this. And the combination of, obviously we now want to blame inflation on Ukraine. We want to blame it on Putin. I mean, see, that's the thing as well, is that people have kind of fallen for the PSYOP a little bit, because they're like, oh well, well, our leaders are saying it's Putin's fault, but it's actually the fact that we're going to Ukraine is the fault or the problem. And it's like, well, not really, because for one part, the reason why gas and petrol is what it is now isn't just down to Ukraine, as we'll get into. And
No.
it's, I think maybe something we could possibly do a retrospective kind of thing on at some point would be just the insanity of petrochemical policy throughout the ages, like from like the 80s onwards and the Malaysia era of motoring and all that kind of stuff, just has all the hallmarks of how bad a managed economy can really go. Managed economies never tend to go well, but when they don't go
No.
well, they go really not well. And
I don't think.
When they go really not well, you end up with headlines like this from the Telegraph that say retirees must withdraw £170,000 from their homes to beat rising costs. This is at a time, by the way, when the state pension is now just over 10 grand a year.
Yeah. They've put it up by another £1,000. Retirees as well, people over the age of 65 own most of the wealth in this country by a massive proportion. And yet what's happened is, and what's happening is, that they are further and further leveraged on that theoretical wealth, because none of the boomers actually have any money left. They've all gone on cruises and they've all spent it all.
Yep.
And so they, what you're seeing here is that retirees, are the average house price is like £400,000, as they were saying, like 430. This means that retirees must take out a third of the value of their homes in equity release. In, you know, that's, this is what's being forecast by the equity release firms. Over the next 10 years, it's going to rise by a third, and its usage is already very, very high.
It's the cost of living crisis, as they're calling it now. It's probably one of your nudge unit terms. It means homeowners will be forced to withdraw 47% from their property compared to 2021 figures, which means people that were already taking, you know, £85,000 out of their home now need to double that.
It's £170,000 more. A large percentage of the population has taken part in equity release.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and look at that £170,000, you know, equity usage by a third in the next 10 years. You know, if you're 65 now and you owned a house that was worth close to £500,000, you might be expected to withdraw almost £200,000 out of that in equity to live to 85 or something like that. So if you're someone that's already taken out, you know, 85,000, you might be expected to do another 85,000 if you're, you know, at least that's the rough idea of the figures I'm getting there. But it's just the thing they got to say, you know, equity release currently funds £1 in every £90 spent by retired people in the UK. That's got to be a lot of money.
It's billions.
The report said equity release had funded $3 billion of domestic spending by retirees in 2021 and was set to rise above $4 billion this year. By 2032, CEBR forecasts equity release spending will exceed £11 billion.
It's quite ridiculous. Equity release, blah 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 blah, age 55 or over. It's basically equity release. It's like the equivalent of getting a payday loan on your house. It is a disastrous financial decision.
Yeah, however, one in four homeowners access property wealth through other means, such as remortgaging, downsizing, or taking out retirement interest-only mortgages, with almost a third putting the money towards home improvements. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, some 23,400 retirees have cashed in $1.53 billion in the first 3 months of the year. So why isn't their forecast $6 billion? Why is their forecast $4 billion?
I don't know, $6 billion sounds like a lot.
Yeah. But it's a sign of the position that people are being pushed into and the lack of options that they have.
So I'm not entirely sure we'll get through all of this stuff, but we do have a super chat here from JD. Thank you, JD. It says, ask boomers genuine immigration control plus mass repatriation or keep a state pension. Is that extra grand per month worth your grandkids' future? Most of them would say yes. Most of these people are awful, honestly. A lot of the people over the age of 55 in this country are genuinely awful people who have no care for the generations who come after them and are laughing at the fact that they'll be dead when these debts come in. It's like a talking point among old people that they've essentially got away with it. Now, I have no sympathy for most of that
one
generation.
One article I had grabbed, no point in getting up because I think you might need to archive it, but I think they were basically looking at roughly an extra 10% increase this year in the tax budget from inheritance, just due to inflated property values, because obviously you know, as the average house price gets closer and closer to about £500,000, it gets closer and closer to that sort of.
No, I've got that. It's in the MISC section near the end.
Ah, right, cool. We can get to that then.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the part of the equation where it starts getting scary in the near term, because the Financial Times. This is from, I believe, the 19th. So this is very recent.
Financial Times. It says yesterday in this, but I suppose this is because it's it's the 19th because it's an archive. Like. Yeah.
It was UK property company insolvency saw as interest rates rise. And they admit later, he says, among those most at risk are commercial landlords who lost out when shops closed during the who would have thunk it?
Mm.
Who would have thunk that closing down businesses for 18 months would create a massive increase? Yeah. In the first 3 months of the year, 81 property investment companies fell into insolvency, according to a tax advisory firm, Mazars, I don't know. This is the highest quarterly figure in more than a decade. So really since the financial crisis, and a sharp increase of 46 companies which went insolvent in the final 3 months of 2021. Among the most at risk of businesses, yeah, they talk about there. Now they face an existential threat in the form of rising borrowing costs. It says, with so much rent still in arrears and creditors increasingly coming knocking, the recent series of interest rate rises could not have come at a worse time. Unfortunately, further rate rise I'd like to follow, which means the sector is likely to have further insolvencies. So look at the graph there, though.
Well, I was going to say, even before that, unfortunately, further rises are likely to follow. So here again is that effect where expectations are actually fueling the market. And I mean, this is part of what interest policy is supposed to do. But when it becomes so warped because you've been at that near zero rate for so long, when you do increase and you do create expectations, you can have these effects where, you know, this is essentially an admittance that in-between sector of non-prime sort of a residential mortgage-backed security market has died.
Well, I mean, it's also goes on to admit. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, that's partially what's going on here, is that boom from a year ago is gone already.
Yes. It's not just gone, it's been shown to be completely false. They basically go on to say here that these aren't actually the companies going to the wall because of the rate rises. They're going to the wall because the moratorium on basically financial forbearance has been removed. Mm. And that they no longer are under the moratorium. Which means that this is just the collapse from the shutdowns. This isn't the collapse from the rate rises. Those are yet to come.
Well, yeah, that's exactly the problem, is the rate rise effect hasn't even happened and people are already reacting like it has, because for one reason or another, either they have reason to fuel the fire or they aren't privy to what's going on.
There's something else here as well. Right near the end, it talks about the construction sector,
yes,
which links into what we talked about during our Infinite Council stage stream. Mm. But the rate of default in the construction sector is far higher than in other sectors and is likely to herald more insolvencies to come. I don't think they're making as big a deal as they should out of that, because the construction sector, being in it myself, is on massive liquidity injection life support by these £7 billion worth of ongoing investment in Greater London. The construction sector is being handed billions in free money, and it is a ridiculous bonanza. And for the construction sector to have a disproportionately large amount of insolvencies should ring kind of panic bells with people, because it means, you know, it's already happening.
Yeah,
all support they've given has already fallen away.
I'm seeing Rob in chat at the end, I would like to hear what we can do to fight in the market I'm in a position to. Well, you're probably not. And you're probably not also an idiot either, so you're probably not sitting there holding loads of debt. So for the meantime, what you need to do is just sit on your fucking hands and don't touch anything while it all falls around you. And hopefully,
yeah,
nothing comes down on top of you. And you'll, if you have property now, you'll still be sitting there with that property you own in a few years' time when everyone else is skint and utterly skint.
Being fiscally conscious, build up savings, pay down debt.
Hmm.
Be essentially as conservative as possible. do the opposite of essentially what they're trying to pressure you to do, which is to
defer gratification.
Yes.
As is always that.
What people really need to do is to, like I said, it's make sure you do not have debt, because debt is about to become a whole lot more expensive in an attempt to make people, they will beg for a bailout by the end.
Funny bugger with me. I'm trying to get some of the US data stuff up. Uses to join that other window. Does not like it.
That's odd. It should just go there.
Yeah,
Fine.
let me put that up and all. Just so I'm not flashing stuff and people.
No, that's fine.
Stanley one.
I'll make sure I've got these up myself as well. But yeah, we have something here as well about the US market, which is, I don't think it's actually in as bad a shape as the UK market is in some ways, but
I'm not so sure. I
it's
think
also in a
there's,
worse state in others.
yeah, there is such a massive variation in the states between East Coast, West Coast, North, South, metropolitan, rural areas that you could be living somewhere and not really notice. I mean, you would notice the interest rates and some other stuff going on, but unless you've got a flood of people who previously lived in California, then lived in Texas, then lived in wherever, and have now moved to wherever idyllic little place you live in. Unless that's happening, you probably not really notice it anywhere near as much anyway, I reckon.
Well, there's a bit of confusing language here. The rates they're talking about here are not interest rates. Interest rates are disastrous to mortgage-backed securities. They're talking about the mortgage rate, as
Yes.
in the net cost for quote-unquote mortgage insurance, and the fixed cost when it comes to taking out debt. Basically, the rate people are lent debt within the market,
Yeah,
separate from the base rate.
this is the 2021 is a year most agency mortgage-backed security investors will be happy to have in the rearview mirror. The agency MBS market underperformed nearly all other US fixed income sectors in 2021 and suffered only its second negative year over the past 25 years, as measured by the Bloomberg US Mortgage-Backed Security Index, which I think is this here. No, it's not. But yeah, it's already ticking over. It's reached its peak, peak housing for this decade has been hit. Peak mortgage market has been hit. So it's only really going sideways or down from here on out.
Well, you can see the
And
massive spike. It says year to date 2021, there's a massive spike in rates there. But that massive spike in rates is a very bad indicator. It's what happened in 2008, in that reality is starting to assert itself in the mortgage-backed security market, and you're starting to see like the unhealthy stuff happen. You're starting to see that people are paying out way more than they should to be able to get mortgages. Therefore, the yields are getting higher. The yields getting higher, not because things are healthier, but because the risk is bigger.
well, yeah, this is them basically coping about it, by using technical language. To put in context, in 2021, the MBS market saw nearly three times the supply as seen on average over the last 20 years, i.e., banks or the smaller banks are given the guy here and his whoever he works for and Morgan Stanley of all places, are being given more mortgage debt than they got, as you're saying, the three times the supply is seen on average over the last 20 years. So they've got all this crap debt, they don't know what to do with it, and he says despite being a government-backed sector and the Fed purchasing over $400 million worth of the bonds, so the US government's subsidizing this process to some extent during 2021, the 800 billion plus supply was too much for the agency MBS market to handle without widening spreads. Which is them, as you say, it's just like is so much volume that they even have to just cope and be like, oh well, we have to have these wider spreads, we have to have these different rates of return, and we have to say that not everything's a triple A for once.
They're basically saying that subprime mortgages are being fired into the marketplace faster than they can be bought up, even with these elevated rates. And when you see yield go from 0.75% to 1.75%, which also almost exactly tracks with what the UK rates are talking about when they talk about the double A versus the A rated mortgage packages. What it's showing is that these are higher risk investment than most people will be willing to adopt, and that the mortgage-backed security market in America is trading almost exclusively on junk subprime, which
Yeah,
is
what's it's funny as
artificially
well because
inflating.
their predictions are way out as well. In 2022, we expect the long end of the yield curve, longer maturity bonds with yields that are 10 years or greater, that chance of that happening, to wake up to the fact that inflation is not as transitory as it initially seemed, although we don't expect inflation to stay at the 7% annualized rate. We do expect it to stay well above the 2% target for the foreseeable future. Transitory inflation components will eventually work their way through as the year progresses. Higher wages and elevated home price appreciation could potentially keep inflation well above target for the foreseeable future. So there's another wee bottom line bit I want to read here because it's relatively interesting. But it's nice to notice that the boys at Morgan Stanley, 2020 end of 2021 were like, yeah, inflation's going to be a problem before this whole Ukraine thing kicked off. Which should really be a hint to you that, to juxtapose the mainstream by saying, well, it's not Putin that causes the inflation, it's the fact we're in Ukraine. It's not the fact that we're in Ukraine, it's this stuff. It's the fact that for decades and decades, these people have been fudging the numbers, both in terms of Fed numbers, the M1, the M2, changing the way that they're measured, changing what's in M0 so it actually shows up in M1, and moving bank deposits around and money market deposit returns around, and just plain loads of trickery so that there isn't actually a real market and there's just this sort of managed attempt to engage in a sort of 2% growth and 2% inflation and this, that, and the next thing. It just doesn't work. And every time the arse falls out of it, they just try and inflate it back up with money. Bottom line. Elevated inflation has forced the Fed's hand to remove accommodation from the bond market much earlier than originally anticipated. As the Federal Reserve winds down its quantitative easing program, QE4 program in Q1 2022, and removes the training wheels from the bond market, look for added volatility across the Treasury market and risk assets in 2022. Agency MBS investors should look to protect themselves from rising bond yields, mortgage rates, by migrating up in coupon to pools that stand to benefit from a possible slowdown in prepayments. So the Federal Reserve's not paying you're paying to buy half a £1 trillion worth of bonds off you, so when the tick man comes, it's all squeaky bum time.
If you read their disclaimer, directly contradicts what they're saying. If you read the disclaimer at the bottom, it says securities with longer durations, i.e. the 10 plus year ones they're talking about, tend to be more sensitive to interest rate changes in securities with shorter durations. As interest rates rise, the value of certain income investments is likely to decline. Mortgage and asset-based securities are subject to credit, interest rate repayment, and extension risk. They only mention interest rates in this section, which is hilarious when they're covering themselves legally. Because what they're basically saying is, yeah, what we said about long-term bonds with interest rate hikes, that's horseshit.
Because
Interest rates.
no one's going to pay them.
No. Interest rate hikes actually completely pull the arse out of those long-term bonds because they make it harder for those people with those long-term mortgages to repay. It's extremely simple mathematics, and yet you have this here, then basically trying to polish the turd and say, volatility is good because reasons, and there are ways to migrate to, they're basically telling people bet on longer term safer mortgages, try and move up market. But as you move up market, you are much more susceptible if you move longer term to rate hikes, as they
Well,
say in their own disclaimer.
here is a tweet from Daniel Lacalle on Twitter of the 30-year mortgage rate, exactly what you're talking about.
Click on the image there. It's not.
Yeah,
It's cutting off the end of it.
I know. I've slid it over.
There we go.
But like 2000. Like, what is funny to notice is I know it's on the far end of the screen, But this that 2007 2008 crisis was in large part caused by this small increase here,
Yeah.
that minimum to maximum there, all the way down, and in the space of 8 months, 6 to 8 months, you've gone from just about 3% to six. It's doubled. Imagine what that does on, as you're saying, about on the far end where you're trying to finance all this crap.
Well, it makes them much more risky investments. It means that people are more likely to default, which artificially drives up, rate yields, which they were celebrating that. It's hilarious them talking about the potential yields going up from the fact that 30-year mortgages in general in the United States are now junk debt. It's an insane situation. It's like them saying, well, I'm being paid. Well, it's like the I'm being paid more because of inflation argument. It's like I'm getting greater yields, but it's because everything I own is now shit. He talks about, the world of shit, but this is the economy of shit. And yeah, that rise is it's unprecedented in modern times. It is insane. We've gone from like 0 to 100 miles an hour in an instant in terms of mortgage rates. And as the next tweet says, who is taking out these 30-year mortgages? Who is buying these record high properties in the US? What, who can afford, he's very generous with his 20% there when he looks at the Charlie Bileno. I don't know who that guy is. He's apparently founder and CEO of Compound Capital Advisors. 2 years ago, the 30-year mortgage rate was 3.13%, and the median existing home price in the US was 283K. Today, the 30-year mortgage rate's 5.78. Well, this is now, I think it's even higher than that now. Even though this is from like,
Well,
yeah.
yeah, it's basically 6%. But what this means is, if
It's just
you,
climbing all the time.
yeah, if you have a if
Yeah.
you have a
And the
10%
median.
or a 5% deposit, which is a lot more likely,
Yeah.
you're looking at least 6%, if not more, which probably means your payments have, maybe more than doubled. It's just, it's not good. That's It's really not good.
People on certain mortgages, like if you have a fixed rate mortgage that is now coming to term, you have like a 5 year fixed rate, and then the rate, goes up again. If you end up with the Federal Reserve putting interest rates up above 2% from 0.25%, or maybe even to 3%, you will see people's mortgage rates quadrupling as some of these come to term. And they are not going to be able to afford that. Like I said, it's 6% on 400K from 3% on 280K. That is an insane difference. And the fact that anybody thinks that this is a market that is not only not only stable but survivable is ridiculous.
And that one, that institutional financial assets or institutional, sorry, institutional sort of finance houses should be putting their money anywhere near. At the same time, you can't switch the TV on. You can't, as we were on the Underground the other weekend, every other bloody poster is about, well, here's how Nationwide's helping first buyers get their homes now and all this kind of crap. It's never
Yes,
ending.
it is the, as we talked about before, the housing-based economy. Housing is really the only thing that people have their equity in. It is what most of like most net worth is measured in people's housing, but most people don't have high levels of equity. Most people have more debt than equity, and so to them, rising house prices is the only way that they will ever see essentially their debt diminish, because most of them are only paying the interest on those mortgages. There's not a huge amount of people in the UK or the US actually paying down mortgages, especially with these new rates. There's gonna be a lot of people electing when they're given the choice just to pay the interest. And so it gets even more unsustainable when that happens. When you end up with rate hikes, we've got these people who own very little. They have very little equity in their homes, and when push comes to shove, they can't even sell to get out of it. That's going to be the situation when the prices eventually crash back down to earth, which all the indicators seem to show that they're going to. That's what this is
I like the
telegraphing.
one you got
So,
from the Daily Mail though, with the big heading.
yeah.
Now brace for pain of the big crunch.
Yes, it's the media. Yeah, The media, but I guess it's Daily Mail being Daily Mail as well, but the media is really kind of telegraphing this stuff. They're really trying to prepare people mentally
What is with
for.
this fucking, is that, what's her face? Kate Middleton wearing some sort of business casual fit here. Get away.
Yeah.
They wear trousers and a fucking tank top with a blazer over it. You're
It's
royalty.
like blazer and jeggings almost.
Ugh. That's abysmal.
That's very cursed, yes. But nobody in 2007 was talking about a financial crisis.
No.
They were talking about how the good times are going to keep rolling, but
It wasn't
everyone now.
until 2011, 2012 until they really started to push into the credit crunch and the double
Yeah.
dip recession. Oh, is
We were
this?
told it would just be a transitory
Hmm.
correction in the mortgage market and, V-shaped recovery, blah, 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 all of that. I think, as we've talked about before, this is a lot of this is like deliberate collapse that's being driven because they have the tools to capitalize on it straight away. Like this stuff you're getting up now, the great resignation narrative, which I don't think is actually happening. I don't think that's a real thing.
The great resignation is the fact that people are either being put out of or leaving their jobs for the fact that they can't afford to travel to them anymore, or they can't
Yes.
afford to live in like London or whatever their crap new age job is.
Or people are having just like mental breakdowns and
Why
not
pay
showing up
rises
anymore.
for your company's flight risks can backfire? Ugh.
Well, it's again, you have very similar headlines from slightly different angles from these are just two examples I picked. But there's a whole bunch of this stuff going around saying don't raise wages, don't raise wages, don't rise wages, don't rise wages. And I guess it can be seen as an attempt to stop a runaway inflation engine happening.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting here that maybe these are some of the ones I haven't read through, to be honest, because they're the ones you grabbed. Do they even really get into in here, like, why is this great resignation happening? Is this something
No.
even they ask? Yeah,
No,
this underlies a deeper question. Are people being tempted to leave because of money alone, or is it due to wider structural problems such as lack of attention to career progression, inflexible work patterns, poor managers, or dire staff shortages and overwork? Yeah, people are leaving their jobs because they're a fucking nightmare.
it's an untenable employment situations. And I get what it's basically being incredibly nebulous and saying this is happening, but it's happening for very nebulous reasons we don't understand. And basically, you shouldn't offer employees money. It's telling them not to, everything is indicating the fact that you need to keep your key employees. This is incredibly bad advice, by the way. This is appalling advice for understaffed companies. If a lot of companies, if they lose one or two key personnel at the moment, they are done.
Yeah,
Like
it's very much someone hasn't done 101 economics and understood what opportunity cost is, and
yeah.
that the cost of not paying the, or shall I say, there isn't just the sole benefit of not paying the upped rate of pay, which is how they seem to be selling it in that other article. I've not poked through this one yet. They seem to be missing the fact that what about like the cost of having to hire someone to do the job that they just left? You know, that as which is as you've this is one of the problems you've had to deal with your work, is that some of the companies that are in your sector are so shaky that even just actually paying the costs of putting you on their payroll is possibly not worth doing because they can't say where they're going to be in 2 or 3 months from now. And whether or not that was worth doing. Never mind actually paying you a proper wage, just the process of hiring and putting you on the payroll is enough of a thing to deter them from we'll just put our own people on more overtime then. Because
Well,
m maybe they are actually following this kind of advice. Who knows?
a lot of people, there's loads of this around, though. A lot of it is based around you need to offer people the ability to work from home, which is part of the whole demobilization thing.
Yes.
A lot of it is just like demobilization propaganda, 4-day work week propaganda. It's trying to sell the 1970s collapse as a social good. They're trying to say we can't afford to employ people 5 days a week. We don't have the resources to have 5 days a week's worth of productivity, and they try to sell it as some kind of social program. That's what a lot of this is. But if, there's another article here from the Times as well, though, which is directly appealing to the inflationary engine aspect, which is, Minister fears 1970 style inflation spiral if pay rises match pay increases.
And
Price increases,
I've
sorry.
already got that one up. I'm sort of having a poke through. Says, I mean, they do
Big
actually
wage rises are too
mention
risky.
tax cuts here, which is kind of surprising. But knowing what we know about the Tory party, it'll be tax cuts for people who make more than like 5 million quid a year.
It won't even be that. The Conservative government, ever since David Cameron, has relentlessly increased tax in many ways. We have a much higher tax burden than we did under Blair. We have a much higher tax burden and much higher spending, especially under the Johnson government, than we did previously because of all that they've done in line with the lockdowns and the
And
furloughs and.
we can't have pay rises because that'll cause 1970s style inflation. But the rail union can go on strike. They can
Yes.
shut down basically Britain's rail freight to about one fifth of its normal capacity for upwards of 2 weeks.
Well, the reason that they can do that is because they are a monolith and they are a nationalized monolith. The idea that we don't have nationalized railways is laughable. We do have nationalized railways in this country and have done for years. Network Rail owns all the rails. They do all the servicing and the franchises are handed out on a laughable basis. There is no rail competition and there never will be under the current system. It is completely government run and owned and that pays lip service to it being not nationalized, when
God, this is
everybody
kind of
really
funny.
knows that it is.
Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, told Northern MPs this week, "Inflation is peaking across the world, but is not a force outside of our control. We have the tools and determination to reduce inflation, and we will. We cannot ignore the reality of the economic situation, but nor should we be intimidated by it. Inflation is out of control, but we will control it. We can't ignore economics, but we should."
It's again, it's the empty platitudes of a class of people who've sold themselves on being able to walk on water when they can't. There is nothing materially the government can do to steer the economy in a meaningful way that will not
No.
just do further damage to it and kick the can down the road. There needs to be a meaningful adjustment in market terms. People need to be allowed to spend their money how they choose and spend it in ways that are, that allow them to bring out their real preferences and are able to get rid of some of the nightmare that people are in. And that will involve a huge amount of pain. But the idea that a government can manage an economy in a meaningful way, I think, has just been exposed by, well, really just the past 100 years as a complete lie. And all we do is we have these booms. Ever bigger boom, ever bigger bust, ever bigger illusion, and just ever bigger lie. And you end up in a situation where, the average house is like a thousand, not like 100 times someone's wage in some cases, or it is, at least 10 times somebody's raw salary before tax, which is completely unaffordable because people's take home is generally about half of that. And when you look at complete taxation, look at national insurance and pensions, you've got maybe somebody earning take home the price of a house in 20 years. How are they going to afford anything? The maths just don't make
Even
sense.
before that, if you are someone who doesn't have a large amount to inherit and has to come up with their own down payment, you've got to go to uni, pretty much, because it's likely that you didn't inherit some form of small, handy business from your parents that's going to earn you 70, 80 grand. So uni it is, which means living in a big city, means paying a lot of rent, which means getting in student debt, and basically having to live somewhere where it's so expensive that you can't even scrape together a down payment on a house that's 20 miles away. Because for you to do that, you then need the car. You need a car to travel to your job from the house that you're trying to afford by paying exorbitant rent whilst trying to cover your student debt. And it's a complete and utter nightmare. And how anyone who lives through that, as people have done since really the 80s in a lot of senses, why did they put up with it? That's the thing that I can't grasp. I mean,
They don't know any better. They're just told that that's reality and they accept it the way it is.
I suppose they can't ignore reality, but nor should they be intimidated by it, as Rishi
It,
Sunak
it's
says.
it's such an empty platitude. Yeah, looking at a 40-year mortgage for one bed flats.
Yeah, but the premiums are great.
Ah, dear. You'll pay, 300 quid a month, rising with inflation plus 0.5% for the rest of your life.
But it's all right anyway, because the UK government is so driven, not just to stop fuel coming in from Russia, mind, but to tax the arse off of anyone willing to pull natural gas or oil at the North Sea to such a degree that you're not going to be able to heat your home once you finally buy it. You're not going to be able to drive your car or what, because you won't be
This
able to afford to fuel it.
is the only one I could get a proper archive of. But this FT article is a lot more gentle in rhetoric than a lot of the other ones that we saw. The energy sector is essentially raging, and they're saying that any kind of investment in North Sea oil and gas has been sabotaged, has been kneecapped. Well, it's not even it's been shot in the head by this windfall tax, because it is no longer profitable for people to invest in the infrastructure to take oil and gas out of the ground of the North Sea. The
Well, what it
sector
also means,
has
the
died.
criticism from smaller and medium-sized producers, including some held by private equity groups. So, not only is it a measure for cutting the supply of oil and gas back that's coming out of British ground, it also means that the people are doing it are now being centralized and cartelized as this anti-competitive measure essentially comes in.
It really does create an environment where the only people who can afford to take oil and gas out of the ground in the UK is the government.
Well, as there's someone in chat, Spindly, saying Shetland will go independent from Scotland eventually. They'd be so rich. No, they won't, because as what's said in here, I'm trying to remember where I found it the other day, but it was essentially an admittance that one of the larger companies that takes shale or was it shale oil or gas or whatever out of the North Sea oil fields above Shetland was going to shut down because the windfall tax has made it so expensive that it's not worth pulling the stuff out the ground anymore.
They've deliberately tipped the equation, it feels like. It's egregious enough that it no longer makes economic sense.
Sorry, that might be in the next article where it mentions the Shetland oil thing.
I don't think we have a next article for this.
Yes, there is. Energy supplier, the ITV one.
Oh right, is that actually mentioned in that one?
It might be, yeah.
All right, we're going to the moving to that one, because the knock-on effect of this has been the fact that
Oh, no, it's not, but this is also a different thing. It was also rather important.
What was that, sorry?
Oh, hey, look at that. Right in the side there. British Airways workers at Heathrow vote to join summer strikes. Good luck leaving. No exit.
Yeah, there's now tw the next article from ITV is quite interesting, because not to jump around the article, but it says that there were 70 energy suppliers in 2018. Now there's 23.
Yeah, the
Oh
household
dear.
energy bills are likely to increase by around 2.7 billion to cover the costs of the 28 energy suppliers that have gone bust in the last, sorry, in the last year. Of that, that's a third of the UK gas and electricity supply just shut off in a year.
Well, not really. What happens is that we basically have a national grid of gas and electric, and then we have, again, it's like the rail,
Well,
fake companies on top of it that pretend
the
to sell it.
supply, the fake supply cartel layer has become just ever more obvious. At least
Yes.
that's for sure.
Well, who's the supplier of last resort? It's the government.
Yep.
So this really is, this benefits them, putting energy firms to the wall. Putting energy, putting oil companies to the wall, putting investment firms to the wall, putting all these people out of business directly benefits the UK government, because they are then able to step in and almost by default nationalize the entire thing. And again, it allows this cartelizing. It is a market completely controlled and set up by the UK government. They have complete agency over it. And
And
so it can only be seen that they are not only allowing but willing this to happen.
yeah, in 2015, the coalition government said that households are missing out on around 2.7 billion in savings by not switching suppliers. This is now the same amount that the supplier failures are thought to have cost.
Well, it's also like a backdoor way of saying that the private sale of energy doesn't work because the fake industry they've set up has collapsed.
Well, how do you compete with the big six, as they are always referred to? That, as JD's pointed out in chat, that the Tory party has said that they can't support all the gas and electricity companies, so they're just going to support the big six.
It's too big to fail everywhere. It's very progressive era JP Morgan versus Rockefeller. It's very Teddy Roosevelt picking winners.
Yep.
It is a straight line between those policies and these policies. It's all the same cartelizing force.
All the rest that we've got for this evening.
There's one I want to go through in some detail. Because it is so
Is this the first BlackRock one?
yes it is, because it's so amazing, honestly.
I'm
No, I
just
think
checking.
it's the second BlackRock one actually. We can go over both of them though. We'll do the first one quickly just because it really is a hat tip to the way that the large managerial kind of economy companies are switching to. You know, it's the EGS measure in the markets, but it's also on the ground level
Well,
that
I
you
think
have.
there was a thing from bloody Joe Biden the other day where he made a personal statement about how the Federal Reserve must include equality and diversity as part of its third plank and its mandate.
Yes. Again, it's very enshrining of ESG. It already exists. In as we'll get on to all this system already exists. They're just formalizing it.
Yes. BlackRock to launch energy security and transition infrastructure program. That sounds really free and free markety. I'm sure there's nothing that's insidious about that at all.
And more than half of early investments will focus on Europe after you oh, here it is. The Ukraine war drove up energy prices. BlackRock is launching an infrastructure investment program focused on energy security and helping polluting companies to become greener, as the world's largest money manager adjusts to new demands on climate change. It's cart horse situation in
Yeah,
that they are
because
pretending that there
yeah,
is
I just like
a cart in
the
front of this horse.
yeah. What was it they said? Helping polluting companies to become greener, i.e. putting people who put out CO2 out of business.
Yes.
The perpetual capital strategy due to be unveiled on Thursday will start with money in the single digit billions from a few cornerstone investors, BlackRock said, with plans to grow it significantly. More than half of the early investments will focus on Europe after the Ukraine war drove up energy prices and sparked new
Yeah,
investor
sure.
interest in funding alternatives to Russian oil and natural gas. BlackRock has
Yeah,
initially
it just
planned
happened.
35 to 40% of its investments, Europe executives said. Yeah, I mean the British government totally hasn't had an agenda for the last 2 or 3 years about, carbon neutral and all this stuff. That's had nothing to do with it.
Oh, here we go. BlackRock has become a target of US conservatives who criticize what they describe as woke capitalism, including the environmental, social, and governance investing trade. Yeah, ESG is here again. They're everywhere now. You can't read any of this without seeing them. Republicans have significantly cited BlackRock's founder Larry Fink letters to companies urging them to address climate change and its past votes in favor of shareholder proposals on the subject. We'll get into that later.
I just
But
BlackRock has become a target of US conservatives who criticize what they describe as woke capitalism. Hey, they're talking about us. We're not
yeah, basically.
US. We're not conservatives
No.
either. Get it right, Financial Times.
Again, I feel like we're kind of at the moment where the ESG thing is coming. It's in the financial services dialectic now, but it's going to start moving into the mainstream one over the
Oh
next
yeah,
6 months.
Rob's saying in chat, remember ESG is only partly environmental, the big push is social governance. One of the things we talked about the other week, mind.
Yes, it
Language
is.
policing like Minecraft 1.19.1 just added. So, oh no, the ESGs in my Minecraft. No.
Well, they basically you can get banned for saying bad words on your own private server.
So what, you just like start up a game and write the N-word in chat and then get banned from your own Minecraft?
Yes.
You can't even say it to yourself. You can't even think it.
You can't even th you can't even we can't even do it in Minecraft anymore.
No, we can't. We have to find a new game. Have they got ESG in Roblox yet?
Roblox, you will do it in Roblox. Go commit self oof. But the big one I wanted to go over is this one from the Wall Street Journal, which is a nightmarish demonstration of one, just how powerful BlackRock is, two, how linked it is with the US government, and three, how it serves as a perfect example of managerial power. It is like a distill. This article is perfect. They even invoke democracy in it. There is a large appeal to democracy here. But let's start from the beginning because I want to go through this in some detail. This article is entitled "The 70 BlackRock Analysts Who Speak for Millions of Shareholders." The firm's investment stewardship team votes 4.6 trillion worth of shares for passive investors. In quotes, it can feel like a lot of power. BlackRock Incorporated casts votes on tens of thousands of proxy proposals a year. The responsibility rests with a team of 70. Millions of people are invested in the stock market through BlackRock's index tracking funds. By the way, to explain to people who are not quite sure what that is, an index tracker is what your pension is. It's what a lot of your investments that your company will offer you
It's
is.
what the
It's what
Americans
a lot
always
of.
call a 401k.
Yeah, it's your 401k, it's your old retirement funds, but your debt will be invested into it. You'll be leveraged into these investment trackers. If you buy any kind of like package financial product from a financial advisor that in the last 5 years, maybe, it will likely be an index tracking fund because it's seen as being lower risk and it's seen as the management like BlackRock is done by somebody else, but that somebody else is BlackRock.
Well, it's not that it's seen as lower risk. It's that it is argued that it results in lower risk.
Yes.
Which, I mean, maybe we could just kind of go over that just now to show. It very clearly doesn't, because what it means is that instead of you putting together your own index of funds by picking 4 or 5 of your favorite things and throwing a bit of money at them and leaving them, instead someone else has the basket with all your eggs in it. You know, it's like the everybody basket. As long as everybody's eggs are all in the one basket, then there's no risk.
Yeah,
But
it's basically.
if you carry your own eggs in your own basket, that's too risky.
Well, what index trackers do also is they homogenize investments and mean that managers, in quotes, can better predict where to point the too big to fail bazooka. But I don't want to get too much. Basically, index trackers are they're managed funds is what they are, and they are largely managed by BlackRock. As these passive investments have grown in popularity. So have the firm's stakes in a 13,000 companies worldwide, and so has the clout of BlackRock's investment stewardship team. They're saying that the team's clout has increased, but really BlackRock as an entity, its
All right,
power has
I've
increased.
just seen the article they've
In
got on the bottom and the most popular opinion. Number four, opinion. We need to remember what Reagan knew about economics.
oh no, yeah. Let's also remember what he didn't know about Martin Luther King Day, but. The tiny group of analysts. You still there?
OBS just quickly disconnected. I think it should be good now.
Right. Sorry guys, we seem to be having, I think it's YouTube that's doing it 'cause YouTube back end froze for me as well. It seems to be all good. It just seems that YouTube's shitting the bed. But anyway, this means weighing in on matters as varied as executive compensation, climate change, and abortion access. Chief executives jockey for time on analyst calendars. They have the power to unseat directors and upend corporate decision making. Dear. It goes on to some blah 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 blah. Yeah, the surging popularity of index funds has made their managers the largest shareholders in many public companies. So this team is the largest de facto shareholder in like BlackRock. Is the largest shareholder in a lot of public companies. This is especially true for BlackRock, the world's biggest investor, with some 10 trillion in total under management. But 4.6 is index funds, which is nearly 50%, which is insane. The amount of equity the firm manages for passive investors has more than tripled over the past decade. That should show you how dramatically the stock market has changed. BlackRock's growth and the way it has sought to wield its influence has rankled corporate executives, particularly those in the oil and gas industry. BlackRock's stewardship team voted in favor of 47% of environmental and social sh shareholder proposals last year, which it can also put forward itself, by the way. Its support helped an activist investor win board seats at the oil giant ExxonMobil. It's basically, again, it's part of the demobilization initiative, and it's really the war on oil and gas that it will be removed by any means necessary. That is, because you remember BlackRock is essentially a government agency because its largest investor really is the government with pension schemes. You must remember that.
Well, see, this is a joke to you, that you know these people are serious when they're bullying ExxonMobil.
Yes.
I mean,
Yeah.
ExxonMobil, I don't know, marketing itself, I think at one point, is basically like one of the biggest companies in the world. It was one
Yeah.
of those, it's like a joke thing that I think probably in the 80s and 90s, that ExxonMobil would have run the world, really. And here we are. They're just a pithy, pithy oil company being bullied by BlackRock, which is
Yeah, we
a private public partnership organization set up to enforce ESG legislation on anything that moves. And if it doesn't move, enforce legislation on that too.
Have a new bunch of emperors, and they're the people who vote the shares in the index funds. Charlie Munger, the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's business partner, said earlier this year. Here we go again. Here's the narrative from the previous article. A group of Republican senators last month introduced a bill calling for individual investors in passive funds to have the option to vote their shares, a move meant to curb the power of BlackRock and its ilk. Basically, they're talking, here we get are the evil Republicans attacking the environmentally aware fund managers. Vanguard Group and State Street Corp, BlackRock's two biggest rivals, also have small stewardship teams. Around about the same size, blah blah blah. BlackRock, here we go. BlackRock chief executive Larry Fink has said he wants to get to a place where all individual investors can vote their own shares. The firm has given the option to industrial investors that control some 2.3 million in assets, trillion in assets. Sorry, good Lord. Investors representing about a quarter of that sum have taken the company up on the offer. So here we see a bit of a shell game. It's a quarter of a half, so only an eighth of the index funds that are managed have direct input from the people who own the investment. Seven out of eight times, BlackRock are the ones voting themselves. So you see the power differential there. They are really the people who are in control of most of the US economy at this point. For now, the stewardship team is looking out. He's looking out for those who can't or aren't ready to vote their own shares. Here we see them being presented as the managerial class, as the benevolent, almost politician-like figure who is looking after the vote of the little guy. They're out there looking out for those who can't or aren't ready to vote their own shares. Never mind the fact that they can't is part of. It's partly BlackRock's fault and responsibility.
Yeah,
Part of why they can't
I'm seeing
is
that.
because they're fighting the evil Republicans.
Yeah, it plays an especially important role for index fund investors because they do not have the option to sell holdings in companies that are not performing as expected, BlackRock said in a February report on its priorities for the 2020 proxy season. Yeah, see, investors on their own behalf would actually have to trust someone. Instead, just give your money to BlackRock and trust us so that we will brew a low trust business environment for everyone.
Its analyst, blah, 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 talks about each stewardship analyst is assigned to cover a specific industry. They dissect company proxy reports and third-party research, including ESG ratings from MSCI Incorporated and corporate governance transparency scores from the non-partisan non-profit Center for Political Accountability. So they have ESG ratings and quangos
Mob.
that feed
Mafia
into this.
investigates mafia, finds no mafia
Yes.
activity.
Analysts also conduct their own research. The team subscribes to research from Institutional Stakeholder Services and Glass Lewis, but doesn't blindly follow the proxy advisory firm's voting recommendations. BlackRock sent a recent.
We dropped out again. But this is a pretty narcissist. Somebody go get Susan Wojcicki on the phone. YouTube's broken.
Oh. There we go. We're back again. I think it was me that time. There we go. What was the last thing you heard me say? Sorry.
You'd said analysts conduct their own research, voting recommendations, BlackRock said in a recent report, and then I think that was all we heard.
Yeah, and but they don't blindly follow. So what they're saying is they're able to justify it by their own agendas. They don't. They're not bound by the data, in quotes. They have high amounts of agency over what they vote, and they basically have no accountability. They are not guided by investor interest. They can justify this whatever way they want, whether ESG, whether straight financial, whether transparency scores, or their own biases or gut feeling or what comes down from above. What they're basically saying is they have all of the cathedral input there, but they are willing and able to go out on a limb and burn people's money for their own agendas if it suits them. Even if a company is underperforming, partially because of their, activist
God.
investor, it says here.
Yeah. Activist investors looking to shake up. I think you mean shake down a
No, no,
company's
no. There's
boards.
a the team's biggest priorities are board quality, strategy, financial resilience, executive compensation, climate change, and human resource issues.
Oh. No,
So
just
what?
the fact that the activist investors looking to shake up a company's board. No, you mean shake down a company.
Yeah.
Sometimes pitch the stewardship team directly. In some cases, they introduce their director candidates to members of the stewardship team in person at the start of the pandemic virtually.
They have become priests because it's not just the investors, the activist investors' money they control. They control all the votes. They are essentially in control of the shareholder process. So if you get a whale investor who says, "I'm going to give you $1 billion if you mobilize $7 billion worth of votes to get done what I want," that is what's being done here. They have become, the shake. They've become powerful enough to shake down ExxonMobil. Therefore, they've become powerful enough to become kingmakers. And if you inject someone into that whose agenda aligns with them, they have a very ready excuse to go out there and cause like material damage to corporations that are not toeing the line. This is how the ESG score is enforced. It's legal, yes, like there's government requirements for it now, but really what will happen is BlackRock, through index funds, will own 51% of your shares, and if you don't do what they say, they'll put some climate change activists in charge of your board and destroy your
Yeah.
company.
In late 2020, Mr. Fink convened a call with a few dozen or so members of the team in charge of US proxy votes. According to people familiar with the matter, his message was clear. The team needed to do a better job explaining their votes to company executives, people said, particularly around climate related proposals. Mr. Fink recognized that he was running a regime and understood he needed propaganda to go hand in hand with that.
Yes. Mr. Fink's main concerns was around public perception. He didn't want Wall Street to think that BlackRock had gone too far in pushing an environmental agenda. I mean, everyone knows that BlackRock is the most evil corporation in the world. It deliberately puts people out of their homes to take them off them. They are the house stealer. They will put your grandma in the street and steal her flat. That is what they're known for. And yet here they are being championed as democracy bringing climate warriors in a Wall Street Journal article, basically telling you that 70 people are your new emperors and they are benevolent and you will love them.
Well, see,
Yeah,
it's
well,
democracy because they're enforcing climate policy on us, and people want that, don't they? They're not.
yeah, it's well, West. They are more powerful than state governments. West Virginia's Treasury Investment Board earlier this year stopped using a BlackRock fund after the money manager urged companies to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. Texas passed a bill that requires state entities to stop doing business with companies that boycott the fossil fuel industry. While BlackRock hasn't argued for such a boycott, many saw it as a warning shot at the firm and its peers. BlackRock's team has gone to greater lengths in recent years to explain the reasoning behind higher profile votes, such as in the Exxon proxy fight, basically them shaking down ExxonMobil. Index funds are required to report their votes annually with the Securities and Exchange Commission every August, and the team published reports on BlackRock's website quarterly. The memo released earlier this year, the stewardship team said climate-related shareholder proposals have become more prescriptive and intended. intended to micromanage companies. The team said it would likely support fewer climate proposals this year than last. They've basically been told to knock it off because it's too obvious. Like, they went in and they were micromanaging companies and basically destroying them deliberately. And the people whose money that they manage have they've been so egregious they started to notice.
Yeah, I'm having a look at the comments myself. It doesn't seem to be. Shall we just go on to, I suppose we've labored the point here. Should we go on to just some of the other stuff we have?
Well, we went over most of it. The food bills one is just funny because they've already revised up the estimate. They were saying that food bills were set to go up by £271. Now it's £380, so essentially 50% more than they thought. It's just another stressor. It's another example of food is generally something they try and hide the inflation from because the food industry will generally just make food worse. But they can't put enough sawdust in the mincemeat anymore.
Well,
You're
no,
gonna start noticing.
I mean the other day I went to buy three quarters a kilo of pork and beef mince, like a value pack of bacon with the 2 packs of 12, some tomato stuff, three or four items of veg, and some potato cakes or potato scones. I want to call them tatty scones, but no one will know what I mean when I say that. And that was £15. And it's Aldi. It's not like we shop in M&S or anything. So
No.
it's gonna get real. It's gonna get real not good real quick.
I would agree.
House prices added and inflation add 100 million onto the dreaded death duties. Families
I
paid
think we went,
1.1 billion in just 2 months, a quarter more than 3 years ago. And we've got another one here. US Federal Reserve to print $120 billion a month to increase inflation above 2% from January 28th, 2021.
Yep. Now they it's from yeah from January last in January last year they were worried about fueling inflation to, like they worried about deflation and they
Yeah.
deliberately fueled inflation with asset printing.
Another one
We
you've
can
got
get
here.
we can get
CFE Institute, myth busting money printing must create inflation. And then they've got the broken window. You're committing the
yeah.
broken window fallacy, bro. Is that them just taking the piss out of us?
Yes.
That's
Yes,
terrible.
it is. There's just they just get roasted in the comments there. It's kind of funny. Once you get to like 2020, 2022, there's just a whole bunch of people who go to the bottom just absolutely roasting this idiot because he's just talking about M1. He's talking about he doesn't recognize the fact that there's not been deflation in Western economies in 50 years.
There's people mentioning MMT and all sorts in the comments. Anyone being paying attention to reverse repo lately? It's at 2.2 trillion. Yes, I was paying attention to reverse repo. I was paying attention to reverse repo in early 2019, or sorry, mid 2019, when it all kicked off. That's why I knew something was going to go really wrong.
I remember you telling me in like February 2020, being like, you do realize the economy's collapsed and that's why there's going to be lockdowns, right? Like you called it then. It I don't know, there's a lot of schadenfreude there. A lot of people, like we have the receipts that say, no, printing money doesn't cause inflation. That's ignorant. No,
Yeah.
it's ignorant.
You can say reality works that way. Reality works the way we say it works.
I hope we've neatly demonstrated a lot of threads connecting there, but we've neatly demonstrated how one, the private sector and the public sector through these private-public partnerships, through things like ESG scores, enforcers like BlackRock, the distinction has broken down, and really we do not have, even in a play pretend sense, market economics anymore.
No, because all the things. Oh, sorry, I just bumped the microphone there. Apologies. All the things that are now part of ESG, as we discussed the other week, are the all the formalized aspects of HR policy, of nudge unit this, of PR institute that, all being wrapped up into one big thing, along with environmental policy and worker rights and all sorts of different just nonsense paper rights that supposedly exist, and we tell people they exist. And it is not how you run an economy. If you want the economy to serve all these goals, then it's going to serve those goals first and foremost. And what that's going to mean is that people get put out of their homes. People can't afford to drive to work anymore. People can't afford to put food on the plate. And when it really starts to get bad on the food and the plate situation, I mean, I actually wonder, you know, are we going to get to a point where do people sacrifice the communication networks, or do they sacrifice meals?
Yeah, there's going to be a big trend there of, like, not to sound like a boomer, but people choosing to pay their phone bill before they pay their food bill.
And in all fairness, some people would be lost in regards to their work, their family, their ability to travel, their ability to do banking. You know, if you're not banking through your phone nowadays, how are you banking?
You can't go into branch. Yeah, it's a thing that we live in, this like renter economy. What happens when you can no longer afford all the things you no longer own? What happens when you can't pay your rent on everything that you like? What happens when everything you own disappears all at once?
That's why we all sit there and laugh at "you will own nothing and you will be happy." But that statement doesn't need to do the PR heavy lifting, because buy now, pay later has been doing it for decades.
Yeah. We're reaching the end of the rope, in that the fictitious economy, that like they can't keep up the illusion of the illusion anymore. It's just going to get grim. It's already the worst it's been since like the 70s now, and it's going like people accuse of being black pill, but no, the truth is just it's going to keep getting worse. Do not take out debt. Try and own as much as you can. Like, do the opposite of what they're telling you, because that's the right thing to do. Build in resilience. Like, I'm not telling people to go out and buy MREs and stuff, but try and have things in your immediate vicinity that you will need. If you have the ability to, if you live in the US, buy a generator if you don't have one and you have the ability to hook one up. Stuff like that. Like, really simple stuff. Make sure you own your vehicle. Make sure, if you can, you own as much as your home as possible. Because the bill is going to be paid, and the way this is going to be done is, as we've talked about, they're going to pretend to bail you out, but the price will be everything.
Mm.
They will own you when this happens.
We will own you, and you will be happy.
Yes, that is really what is being said there, but... Do we have anything to shill before we close out here?
I suppose we can mention our plans for next week's streams. Since there was a few people asking, and it's something we might as well get round to, I think we're going to do a bit of a, like, what's in our bookshelf sort of stream on Monday. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure what form that might take. I've taken a big picture of it anyway, and I don't think we've got any more books arriving this.
No.
So... we can sort of.
Is it all
fit
still?
No, there is lots of it down on the bottom bit now, but it looks neat and nicely laid out, which is good. So,
okay.
But what I'll do is, I've got the big full picture. I will take pictures of each of the different sections as well, and we can just sort of go through. We could probably go through the whole thing, I reckon, really, and mention each one, but focus on, say, at least a key sort of half dozen or so that we think people should pick up. And then on Thursday, same time as this stream roughly, we're going to be doing a discussion on what is the purpose of the distant right? What ends does it really serve? And we will have at least one special guest for that. I don't know if I'll mention or not. Maybe I won't. I'll keep people surprised.
We'll reveal it close to the time, but we might have some decent special guests that week. We do have good stuff planned, and I'm looking forward to going through the bookshelf stuff. I think a couple of the books are still here. I know, what have I still got here actually? Yeah, what will be left out of that shot is I still have Sovereignty by the Juvenile, which I've read, and I have Scott Horton's Enough Already. His essentially War on Terror magnum opus. I'd highly recommend that book.
Yes.
But I guess we can mention those as exceptions we no longer have on the. I'll probably bring those back next time I'm up. But yeah, those aren't on the shelf currently. But we are lacking in secondary literature. But we'll talk about that when we actually go over them. Apart from that, though, no,
Yeah,
the
I
hope.
suppose we could do the usual thank people for turning up to the stream and the people who are members and the people who donate in Super Chat. I don't know if anything else has come through Streamlabs. What's been going along?
I'm looking currently, and no, but we did have the one donation, so
So I don't know. Thank you all for showing up once again for one of our streams,
yes,
and we'll see you on the next one.
I'm going to say there are links down below.
Yes, there are
We
indeed,
do have our
actually.
Telegram stuff.
Yes, I will post the Telegram link because I don't know. The more people that join that, the better, really, because that's just, I'm afraid, where you can find us nowadays.
Yeah, we're a little bit niche. We are leaning into the micro part of micro internet celebrity,
Well, there was
but
also, to some extent, I'm just, I don't want to be beholden to Twitter. And I'm
yeah.
not saying that Telegram is by any means perfect, but we're not going to get kicked off there for saying spicy stuff just yet. And we've
That's
already
not
had the
just
police,
yet.
we've already had the police chap at the door once, so a second time would be easy.
Yeah, we're used to it by now. But yeah, thank you guys for showing up, and good night.
Good night.